Well, hello everybody and welcome to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network. We're live for this promoter test session at Motorsports Raceway here at Bowmanville, Ontario. A beautiful, sunny summer's day and one or two cars already in the pit lane. Let's go down there and check our equipment. I've got a new pit lane reporter for this session, Carter Coyle. Has stepped in for us. Good afternoon, Carter. How are you today? Hello, Carter. Well, unfortunately, just as we were going to go down there, seem to have lost our contact to the pit lane. And we'll keep our fingers crossed we get that back as the green flag comes out. And we will have some time for it in a little while. It's the usual setup with the cars getting half an hour of time on their own out on the circuits. It's the GT cars first out this time. They'll get half an hour on their own, and then it will be the middle section with all of the cars out, and then at the end, it's the prototypes alone. And we will get the cars coming round to us in just a moment. Hopefully, we'll get some noise as well. Our thanks to Bubba Clark, as ever, who has sorted things out here. So the first car's out, the Flying Lizards. And here comes the number 45 car. Oh, yes, that sounds wonderful as it goes by us there. And through on to another lap. I'll give you the drivers as they're come up to us. We're on the outside of the final turn here at Northport. Great view of the cars as they come directly towards us. Let's go down to the pit lane if we can, and let's see if we can get a word with Carter. Hello, Carter.
Hey, John.
How are you this afternoon?
It's a beautiful afternoon here in Motorsport, and I'm really looking forward to this practice session.
Well, welcome along to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network. Your first time with us, and thanks for stepping in at short notice. It's been great weather all week. Quite a few of the teams have been testing, and already a huge crowd here, quite the biggest crowd I've seen this early in the week so far. And Carter is going to station herself down in the pit lane and bring us some of the news from there. We'll be joined by Jeremy Shaw in a little while as well. And if the traffic... And Kelly has made it. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, Don. They just let me through customs. Can you believe it? Apparently, I have a terroristic look about me.
I'm sure you were trying to smuggle something.
yeah, for you.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, welcome along. I'm glad you've made it. And it's going to be the GT cars for the first half hour, so that'll give us a chance to talk to some of the guys. So Kelly Stavis and Carter Coyle in the pit lane for us this afternoon. I'm John Hindhoff. This is the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, and the time's beginning to come in. 1:22:00 for Jörg Burgmeister. I think that we will see at least three, possibly a complete set of lap records this weekend. The drivers that I've spoken to so far, and I've been out on the track myself already in a ZR6 Corvette, and the track is very quick indeed. It was a little dirty when we were first out there, but it's cleaning up very quickly, and the numbers to look out for, qualifying records, 105.8 for the P1 category, 105.9 for P2, 113.3 for GT1, and 118.5 for GT2. Now, the Porsches in particular in P2 were telling me they are now absolutely flat out through the first, second, fourth, and eighth corners, which should mean that the lap times do come down. Now, this weekend we have 29 cars with us, all of the usual suspects, 5 P1s, 2 from Audi, 1 from Autocon, 2 from Intersport Racing. In P2, it is 9 cars, 2 Penske Porsches, 2 Dyson Racing Porsches, the BK Motorsports Mazda, they're waiting for their new car, of course, the Coupe. The Acuras of Patron Highcroft Racing, Andretti Green Racing and DeFerrin Motorsports, making up a tremendous P2 category that we have here. GT1, it's the two Corvettes and the Aston Martin of Bell Motorsport. And in GT2, the usual eclectic mix. 12 cars for the round dozen, including Aston Martin, Dodge Viper, Porsche, of course, Pinos Esperante, and just the two Doran Ford 430 GTs this weekend. Doran Ford GTs, rather, it's a Ferrari F430 GTs, which make up the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different manufacturers in that particular category. Let's have a look at some times. Johnny O'Connell's at 1:16, is fastest of the GT cars at the moment. Jamie Merlot looking for a better look this weekend, leads the GT2 cars with a 1:18.4. Quite hot out there this afternoon. Jörg Bergmeister in the 45 Flying Lizard in third place with a 18.5. In the pit lane, the number 18 VC Racing car. Now this car has been changing its livery over the last few weeks, and at the moment it stands with a red roof and the rest of the car pretty much white. I'm told there's a sneaky livery to go on that car over the weekend. Jim Roller and the rest of the guys at Wheeler TV cutting pictures for us already this weekend. Seems that we're well ahead of ourselves. That VC Racing car this weekend, Nicky Pastorelli and Mark Besseng. So just one of the Pastorelli brothers teamed with Mark Besseng, the real Porsche specialist and certainly a Nürburgring specialist. Fresh from our trip there, we've come directly from the Nürburgring to here at Motorsport Park. And it has to be said, there's more than a passing resemblance between the two circuits. So just 7 minutes into this session, you're listening to the American Le Mans Series live from Motorsport. Bit of bonus coverage again for you today. The 007 Aston is out. Lord Drayson at the wheel. Now, they are the beneficiaries of some rules changes as he comes out of 5C, which is Moss Corner. And benefit of some rules changes this weekend, which has allowed them to have a very different rear wing mounted on that car. Much more of a GT1 size, shape and position on the back. That car looks fantastic. First time I've had a chance to have a look at it. Still not allowed to be the highest thing at the back of the car, and it's just underneath the roof line. But goodness me, all of a sudden they've Gran Turismo'd up that rear end of the Aston Martin V8 Vantage, resplendent as ever in Feltham green with the Union flag on the roof and the lighter green additions around the intake and the shade band. Now, while we're talking about that car, it seems only reasonable that we should find out what differences that rear wing have made. And Carter is down in the Barwell Drayson pit, with the second driver, Lord Drayson. Now, at the moment, that means Johnny Cocker in the pit lane with Carter.
Johnny, you were down here with your team testing earlier this week, and so were a lot of the teams. What kind of advantages is that going to give you this weekend at Motorsport?
I think for us especially, obviously developing the car this year, really. So we've got a few new parts on the car, which we've had a bit of time to test prior to the event itself. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to give us an advantage just from pure mileage. But also, you know, me and Paul have never been here before. Same as all the other circuits that we're coming to. So again, you know, coming into testing now, we're going to have that little bit of an advantage over what we would have had if we'd obviously not been here, just from track knowledge really. But no, I love the circuit. I think for me it's my favourite track up to now actually. So I've been really, really been enjoying myself. So, you know, fingers crossed for a good weekend, really.
Tell us a little bit about what else is different. What about the relay? Tell us a little bit about what else is different at the track this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, we're going to be running the car just a little bit different on the... We've got a different rear wing this weekend. We've got a slightly different new development of the engine, just from a reliability type of point of view. And, yeah, I mean, that's about it, really. So, you know, like I say, each race meeting we've had was something new, really, to try and push forward and hopefully get the car quicker and quicker. We seem to be doing that, so, you know, like I say, fingers crossed.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thanks, Carter. Carter Coyle down there in the pit lane with Johnny Cocker from the Drayton Barwell concern. That car looking very good. The other Aston, the DBR9, out on the circuit as well at the moment, and just about to start putting some representative times in. Terry Borchella at the wheel. And remember, Terry having a great race here a few years ago in the Celine. Actually, they had another couple of laps. They may actually have done even better because they had tyres at the end of the race when the Corvettes didn't. So Terry Borchella just on his first flying lap, heading up towards turn number 3 at the moment. And Johnny O'Connell and Ollie Gavin, the two fastest times, just half a second, that usual half a second or less between them. As they are already down into the 15s, 15.2 and 15.7. Jamie Miller, 17.8, which is 3 or 4 seconds away from the very best that it could be, but these are very early days indeed. Joined by Jeremy Shaw in the booth. Beautiful day. Welcome to Canada. But, hang on a second. Let's put the right one up.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. It's heated up there in the last couple of hours, hasn't it?
Just.
Boy, jeepers. Got in here last night and it was crystal clear and beautiful temperatures, and again, the same this morning. But now, boy, it's the humidity's gone up dramatically and a lot warmer. But, you know, I'd say perfect condition to go racing, quite frankly. Just love it.
29 cars here, as we mentioned. We've got the GT cars out for another quarter of an hour or so. Track looking a little bit slippery. They were doing a lot of sweeping at lunchtime when we were out with the Vitesse cars, which rather held us back a little bit. But the track will rubber in as the weekend goes along. A lot of testing earlier on in the week here.
Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, I think quite a lot of teams were out running around and getting a lot of information. And speaking of most of the teams, obviously, you know, pretty happy with the way things went. Most of them seemed to learn what they wanted to learn. However, they get here today for the first official practice session of the weekend, and it's about 20 degrees warmer, so I think a lot of the things they learned during those test sessions early in the week, pretty much now you can throw out of the window because track conditions are completely different today. And most of the drivers are saying, well, in the other sessions, that the track is pretty slippery and the cars are sliding around a lot. And we've got GT cars out there right now, and we're seeing a lot of pit stops as the guys come into the pits and make some changes to the car, just try and settle the cars down a little bit because it is, as I say, a lot warmer than it was, and generally speaking, in these conditions, the cars tend to slide around a little bit more than they would do otherwise.
Well, here we are then with the test session, just about 14 minutes in to the test session with the GT cars out first. And the 62 Jamie Milo car is fastest at the moment on a 1:17.7. Let's go down to Kelly Savage in the pit lane. Afternoon, Kelly.
Well, Don, of course, that Ricci Ferrari, the 62, the defending champs here at Mosport from last year. And you'll remember, they set the pole, they led every lap, won the race, and Jamie Milo set a new track record in the process. Well, they were one of the teams that was out here earlier in the week testing, and they told me that Jamie got back in that car and he has set a faster lap by more than a second from that time he set in the record in the race that is last year. So we'll see how that plays out. When he gets out of the car, we'll talk to him a little bit about that.
I think everybody's going to be quicker this year, if truth be told, just simply because of the pace of change in tyre technology, if nothing else. And off has gone the York Burgmeister Flying Lizard at the final corner, right in front of us. proving how hard everyone is trying at the moment. You might have just heard the squeal of tyres on our effect mic just out in front of us. Like, Jörg was pushing on very quickly indeed. Coming through the penultimate corner, got himself set up pretty well. Jeremy Shaw's alongside me. Oh, he's just taking too much speed through the second last corner.
Indeed, and just got a little bit wide there. So halfway through the corner, got on the marbles there. There's still, as you said, doing quite a lot of sweeping going on at the lunchtime, but he got out in the marbles there and just loose bits of rubber off the racing line. And once he got on there, the back end just came around and kept going around. So just had a quick, harmless, well, it wasn't really even, I guess it was kind of a whole, just about a whole spin, wasn't it? Loops it around and off he goes again. So no damage to that car number 45.
Amazing how many drivers I've spoken to who just said to me, God, I love this track. Love this track. Great. Real rhythm sort of track. Very fast down the Andretti Straight at the back of the circuit. Well up over 230, 240 kilometres an hour, 180-ish plus miles an hour. And the guys in the P2 cars telling me that so many more of these corners are becoming flat for them now. Still a challenge. Not easy flat, but certainly no hint of a breathe on the right-hand pedal.
That's if everything goes right, in particular on fresh tyres that way, but once you get the tyres a little bit worn and get some rubber down or a little bit more weight in the car, maybe you're on full tanks, then it's very definitely, it's a serious challenge here. And I think Gilles de Ferreira was speaking to a couple of his fellow drivers when he was here for the very first time on Monday, Tuesday, earlier this week, and he was joking, but I think he was beginning to reconsider his decision to come out of retirement. This is a place that you treat with a lot of respect.
A lot of respect required, absolutely. Let's go down in the pit lane. Ollie Gavin setting the fast time early on, a 1:15.1. He's now out of the car and his teammate in it. So that means the four car from the three car at the moment. Down in the Pratt & Miller GM Chevy Corvette pit is Kelly Stavast.
And Oliver, we'll start with talking about your time in the car, setting the fastest lap to this point. What is it that you like, or what's an advantage for you here at Motorsport?
Well, I really love the track here. I think that's actually a bit of a misprint on the timing. I haven't been in the car yet, so I think Libby is doing a great job. But I like.
I think you did that on the bike, actually, weren't you?
Yeah. I've been running around here, or I've ever been on a bike. I can't really remember. Still a bit of a blur after the accident I had at Elkhart Lake. Do like Motorsport, fun track. Hi, Peter. How are you? It's fast, it's quick, it's challenging. It's one of the circuits that hasn't been wrecked or ruined by chicanes. I enjoy it here.
We've really seen this rivalry between the 3 and 4 Corvettes push to their limits, first at Mid-Ohio, then at Elkhart Lake. We saw you kind of taking out a banner there at the last race. What was going on?
Well, yeah, that was me pushing hard, and we'd just had a caution period, and Jan had made up all of the advantage we'd built up after they had a pit stop, and we were just a little bit quicker than them over the whole weekend at Elkhart, but they'd made up all that time under the pace car, and I was pushing to try and get away, and had a little bit of pickup on the tyres, but I just drove into the kink a little bit too quick, a bit too hard, turned it a bit late. I got it on the curb on the inside and then lost it. And I smacked the wall on the outside. And of all the places to go off at Elkhart Lake, that's certainly not the place to do it. And it just so happened as I was roaring down the grass that there was this Champ Car banner. And I smacked it. And it was quite surreal because I thought it was going to come up onto the windshield. I thought, oh, God, no. I've only hit the wall on the outside. I've now got to be able to see where I'm going. Once I got back on the track and got down towards Canada Corner, I realised that I wasn't going to be able to make Canada Corner, and it was a bit of a odd way to finish the race, just ploughing it into the gravel at that corner. It's been just one of those seasons where nothing has really gone right for us on the four car. It just seems that we've every weekend found another way to either have bad luck or to throw it away when we've been in such a good position and we've been quick everywhere we've gone. It's just nothing is falling right for us. And sometimes you have seasons like that. And Olivier and I are just still sort of trying to knuckle down and get a good result here at Motorsport. But if it doesn't happen for us here, then we'll move on to Detroit. And if it doesn't happen for us there, then we'll move on to Petit. And we'll just keep going until we do get one. We know we will.
Well, you just said, people, this is what happens. Everyone has a season like this. But have you had a season where you've had just one after the other issues like you have this year?
Well, no. Not with a team like Corvette. You know, whereas, you know, everything's so well run and so sort of reliable generally, we just have had so many bad luck issues with things failing where that's never happened before. And you know, it is frustrating. And it's not just so frustrating just for the drivers, but it's frustrating for the crew. I know Mike West is our new crew chief this year, and he was desperate to have a good season. And he seems frustrated because, you know, every which way we seem to turn, something just goes wrong. And none of it's really been his fault. So it's just the way it goes sometimes. And you just have to take it on the chin and move on.
Well, hopefully they'll turn over a new leaf, and we'll see if he can outdo his time on 2 feet when he gets behind the wall at that number four a little later. Thanks, Oliver.
Ollie Gavin then, still the... still the fastest time, despite he hasn't been in the car, but Johnny O'Connell's gone by Olivia Barretta's time of 1:15.1 by 0.087 of a second. Olivia Barretta now is now led by Johnny O'Connell, but only Yardley Hastings' fastest sports car driver is still Ollie Gavin. So the GT2 category, as ever, as close as we expect, with the first four cars just over a second between them. Half a second between Minka Salo and Jörg Bergmeister, 62 from 45. Dirk Müller in the 71 Tafel car in third position. Dirk Werner, the 87 Farnbacher Lowell's machine, in fourth. Then it's the second of the Lizards, Patrick Peeley, in the 46 car. David Robinson is the first one out in the 40 GT Ford in sixth position. Ahead of a struggling Terry Borchella in the 08 Aston. That car not up to speed yet.
I fancy that was David Murray who was out first of all in the car number 40, the Ford GTR, the Robertson Racing.
You may be right.
Entry, and perhaps David Robertson now at the wheel doing 1:32 is the last couple of laps, so about 10 seconds off the quickest time that car has done. But certainly an excellent effort. Is that, assuming that was David Murray in that car number 40, that Ford GTR, up into sixth place in the early stage of the session in a relatively few laps, is a very, very promising effort.
New rules for some of the GT runners this weekend, and the Ford GT as well as the Aston Martin, the beneficiary of some rules breaks. Talking earlier on about the Aston's rear wing, I'm sure you'll be seeing on dailysportscar.com, Speed TV and the American Le Mans Series website, pictures of the new rear wing. Now, we've got a problem with one of the Tafel cars. It's the 71 car of Dirk Müller, second place car, weaving around as he came out of the Moss corner complex. He's got a flat left rear tyre, and I'm not sure he realised it, and it's now given up on him coming down to eight, and he manages to get the car pulled up in a straight line. That could have been very nasty indeed. It's, even for the GT cars, well over 150 miles an hour coming into turn eight, and he's done a reasonably good job. This is coming up the hill to Moss. We're getting a replay now. He's just turning in, and the back end of the car, I saw it slide. I just thought he was pushing a little hard. But no, the tyre's already gone down at that point. Watch from a number of different vantage points. And a lot of people do that. I think turning out for qualifying on Saturday might not be a bad idea. Very looking forward to that. Let's go down into the pit lane. The fastest GT2 time was set early on by Jamie Maylo. He's out of the car now. Minka Salo is in, and that means that we can have a chat with him, courtesy of Carter Coyle in the Ricci pit.
Jamie, great start here in the practice session. What are you expecting for the rest of it?
Well, I mean, I think we have done a very good test on Tuesday, and I've done a few laps now, and the car seems pretty much the same on Tuesday. So we expect to improve a little bit more, especially the rear stability, and hopefully we can get more 2-3 tenths.
And as we keep hearing and seeing, this track is certainly one of our most challenging in the American Le Mans Series. What do you think is the most challenging part of this track in particular?
I mean, it's a very difficult track. It's a high-speed track, and it's going to be traffic and to find a good balance for these high-speed corners. So I think traffic and keep consistent is going to be the key for the race.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Well, that car already under the race and qualifying lap records set by Jamie. GT2 qualifying 1:18.5, and also the fastest race lap of 1:18.5 for 113 miles an hour set this time last year and a 17.7.
Yes, actually, that's wrong. Actually, the qualifying lap record here, I believe, was a 17.841.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Last year.
But still in all, even if it's an 8, he's still a 17.7.
Yeah.
So he's still underneath both the records there, which is remarkable. And just again, and we keep seeing this at all of these LMS races, just underlines the pace of change in this world-class sports car series. As out on the circuit is the number 8 prototype of Ben Devlin, second in P2 at the moment. And this, the Mazda-powered Lola, which we'll be only seeing for a couple more races in this guise, because already on the high seas, heading from Huntingdon to the United States, at least, is a coupe version of that P2 car. And has it already arrived?
Yeah, I think it's already here, and I believe they're working on it back at the shop just down the road from Road America, and they're planning on giving the car a shakedown. I think about two or three weeks hence. So I believe they're already working on the car, which I think is one of the reasons why the team was not here on Monday and Tuesday for that open test.
Well, we've got a tremendous entry in the offing for Petit Le Mans. Two races away, just under a month away now. And that race, traditionally one of the Blue Riband events, the Blue Riband event, really, of the American Le Mans Series. 11 running of the Petit Le Mans. Confirmation from Peugeot at the Nürburgring last weekend when we were there for the Le Mans Series that they will bring two of the 908. A lot of rumour around the paddock about who else might come. Certainly Creation bringing two cars, which means we will for the first time have three Creations at an American Le Mans Series race, because of course the Autocon car will be here as well. Six, seven with the Audis, 8, 9 with the two other Creations. Only going to take another one or two P1 cars to have a very interesting field of P1 cars, and I hear a rumour that won't go away, that the Charouse team are looking very hard at this at the Petit Le Mans event. Also, Ian Dawson in his V10, with his V10 diesel, hoping to get to that event as well and take part in this, what's rapidly gaining momentum, this green challenge at Petit Le Mans. Great interest from Peugeot and from Ian Dawson's Eco team. Now let's have a look at some times. Timo Bernhard the quickest, a 106.5. Hello. He's got down to business very early. Last lap around, Timo Bernhard with a 106.5 in the number 7 DHL Penske Porsche. He's half a second quicker than Marco Werner in the number 2 Audi R10 TDI. Emmanuel Pirro doing the early work in the number 1 car is third. He's 9/10 of a second away from Timo's best time. And then it's another 3 seconds back to David Brabham, who's just getting up to speed in the first of the Acuras on the timing and scoring monitor, that being the Patron Highcroft car. In GT1, a 15.1, still the best. Just 0.087 of a second between the two GM Chevy Corvettes. And the 17.7 is still the best time in the GT2. Dirk Müller has just nipped up into second place, though. Back out after that puncture. Jörg Bergmeister shuffled down into third. Dirk Werner in fourth for the Farmbacher Lowell's 87. So that's 62, 71, 45, 87. And still, the Terry Borchella pilot at 008, GT1 Aston Martin, mired down in the GT2 field, a 119.3, that car's best. And Terry lapping very consistently, but in the 20s and 21s. And that is not right for that car. They're playing about with something, but at the moment they are something like 4 seconds, more than 4 seconds, away from the Corvette. And that surprises me. That car should be quick around here.
Yeah, the GT2 cars are, I think, surprisingly close to the GT1s in terms of lap time.
Less than a couple of seconds.
2.5 seconds between those two. And as ever, of course, the two Corvettes, just a blink of an eye between the two of them, 0.087 to be exact with the number three car, Johnny O'Connell, having set that time for 115.103 to Olivier Bretta's 115.190.
The P2 cars are super, super quick here. James Rossiter back installed in the 26 Andretti Green Racing car. And the closing speeds here are absolutely frightening. Coming down through turn four, which remember is flat for a P2 car, James Rossiter can't see as he turns in left-handed. And as he's turned in the dip is the number 40 car, the Ford GT. And he's had to just ease the steering off to the right a little bit. And went round at least 15, 20 plus miles an hour quicker. And then, of course, he's braking later than even the fastest cars. And again, he does exactly the same in the same spot, coming up the hill to the first of the Moss Complex corners. That time on the 62 Ferrari of Mika Salo. And really, these P2 cars are getting scarily quick round this circuit. And the boys are loving it. I have to say that all of the drivers that you speak to say, this is what I signed up for. I can make a difference. It is not just about the car. Yes, the cars are great. They're always going to say that. But I feel I'm making a difference, and it's about keeping your foot in and really no guts, no glory as far as the lap times around here are concerned. Let's go down into the pit lane. Kelly, what do you have for us?
Down here with Wolf Hensler from the Flying Lizards Porsche, and they've extended their points lead over the Tafel Ferrari, but those last two laps there at Road America were pretty hairy. And we saw a couple of cars come away with some paint scraped off. Can you tell me about those last moments in that race?
Yeah, that was a very, very hard two laps at the end, especially the last lap when Dirk Werner passed the 62 Ferrari and he spun. And I was able to manage to pass Dirk Müller in the 71 Ferrari. I said, okay, now this last lap I have to try it. And we both were driving down the back straight, and I said, now, okay, it's the last chance, and I tried to brake as late as possible, but Dirk Müller fought the same, but he braked a little bit too late, and he came sideways, and then it was easy for me to go inside in turn five, that left turn, and pass him there. And it was very, very good for us for the points, so we could win. We could gain 3 points on them, but it's still very tight. We are 7 points ahead. It's not much by four races left, so it's still very, very tight. For sure, it will be till the last race.
Well, are you thinking about the points at that moment? Because I think some drivers would choose to kind of back off and finish behind the Tafel Ferrari and not risk anything. But for you, was it just more important getting in front?
I mean, that's our main competitor in the championship, and to finish in front of them is better than behind. So, and we are here for racing and not for staying behind somebody. And if there's a chance, I take it and I try to pass somebody.
And what do you expect to see out here at Mosport? Is this a track that suits you?
As far as I can tell, if we watch what happened last year, the Ferrari was very quick here last year, and I don't know, it's early to say. I don't know if they are again so fast or if we got better. I hope we are very close, and we will see more in the qualifying tomorrow.
All right, well, he's getting ready to get in the car. Have a good practice.
Thank you.
Wolf Hensler in the Flying Lizard Porsche.
Thank you, Kelly. Kelly Stavis down there in the pit lane along with Carter Coyle for this session. You're listening to bonus coverage of the American Le Mans Series, powered by RadioLeMans.com, with Jeremy Shaw and myself, John Hindhoff, in the booth. As we are 44 minutes into this session. This is the middle 1 hour part of the session where all 29 cars, prototype and GT alike, are allowed out onto the circuit. As David Brabham has improved and gone to a 106 even to take the fastest time by a tenth, almost 0.2 of a second from Timo Bernard. You just know that this is a Patron, and particularly in an Acura type of circuit, and it's certainly a David Brabham circuit, isn't it, Jeremy?
Yeah, well, it's the sort of track that David will absolutely love. Yeah, he's an old school racer. He's not old necessarily, but he's an old school racer, David Brabham. He
nicely
just loves
done, sir.
This
nicely
sort of
called.
Racer. Yeah, well, he's a real motor racing fan. I mean, he loves the sport in general, the history of the sport. Of course, his family has played a huge part in the history of the sport. His father, of course, a 3-time Formula One world champion. His elder brother, Jeffrey, was a several-time IMSA Camel GT champion, and
IndyCar driver, and, you know, David's driven everything under the sun as well, and this is the sort of track on which he was brought up, certainly in the early, you know, particularly in Europe. It's a very European-style circuit, and it is one that he, as all these drivers do, just loves the challenge of.
Now,
quick times, aren't they? We've got, what, six cars now within a second. Patrick Long, the latest to dip into the 1 minute six bracket. So the track record here, a 1 minute 5.829 set in qualifying last year.
By I confidently predict.
And you were talking about, yeah, how quick this track is and how it kind of vies with Road America as being the fastest track on the schedule. And I was just doing a little bit of math here, and that the pole speed at Road America a couple of weeks ago, pole speed was 136.277 miles an hour set by Lucas Lure. And I was just trying to figure out what time you would have to do here to get down to that same average speed. And I reckon it's a 1 minute 4.959, which is
just under 105.
Yeah, exactly. Just less than a second quicker. Exactly. That was my point here. Yeah, they're getting very close to it now. There's another slight improvement there for David. 16005, is it?
Yeah. Very good.
Here he's within a tenth of a second now of the LMP2 class fastest lap, because it was Capello here who had the pole last year at 105.8, and the quickest time in LMP2 was by Romain Dumas, driving car number 7, which is now currently second fastest once again, and his time was 105.9.
Intake a breath as I'm watching Marino Franchitti out in the number 20 Thetford Norcold sponsored Porsche of Dyson Racing. He's down in 8th position at the moment with a 108.9 from that car. He's just done a 109.5 second lap, but he is pushing. Notice the headlights on the Dyson car are of a standard variety. They're using the inside headlights that are on all the time, and then the ones that are further up and further out flash when you want to attract someone's attention. In an effort to save a little more weight, or at least put weight where you want it, you watch the front end of the DHL Penske Porsches. They have LED front lights now, which are mounted in clumps of four. There's several advantages with that. A, they are very bright. B, they are very light. But C, some of them can stop working and you've still got your headlights running, which is a mandatory part of the American Le Mans series. Just as the car's heading towards us now, you'll just be able to see the slight different headlights on the number 7 car. Have a look at them in the paddock if you are coming up to Motorsport in the next couple of days. Some slight detail changes being made all the time. And of course, Dyson do get the direct injection engine this weekend.
Do they?
That's what I've been told. That they will have it for the next two races and beyond.
Just one of them, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, that's what I believe.
I know that was the team's hope coming into the weekend. And to be honest, I haven't got down there to find out whether or not that hope became a reality.
Certainly that was on the cards as far as the development of the Porsche RS Spyder was concerned. Now, Emmanuel Pirro and Marco Werner in the two Audis, and Emmanuel Pirro is up at the far end of the circuit from us, Moss Corner at the moment, that big R10 TDI, not really at its best, going through the twisty, tight turns of Moss Corner, but when it gets onto the back straight, my goodness me, does it pick up speed quickly.
It does indeed, and that is really where it is at its element, on that big, long, rising back straightaway, undulating and twisting and turning, and boy, that's where that car really does come into its own, coming now through the final couple of corners, using all the road there, and a bit of the curbing coming through turn 10. Across the line goes Emanuele Pirro. Well, it was 7.2 that time, so about three-quarters of a second away from his best lap so far in the session. Once again, it's still David Brabham at the top of the charts in a Petronas Highcroft Racing Acura, the P2 car, 106.005, and Timo Bernhardt in a quicker of the two DHL Penske Porsche RS Spyders at 106.1, and then the P1 car, the number one Audi R10 TDI of Emanuele Pirro, 106.5, who's now been split from his teammate Marco Werner in the number two car, who is now down to fifth fastest in the session overall, and he's been split by James Rossiter, who's done a 106.607. Boy, it's so tight there in this first six, seven places. Seven cars now within, well, a tad over 1 second. Luis Diaz, a couple of laps ago, went down to 107.0.
Just looking at, I mean, if there's a tenth or a couple of tenths between these cars, it's a big gap. Yeah. You know, it's fractions of tenths now that we're talking about. And remember, at the end of this session, we're going to get half an hour of just the prototype. good shot as the cars are coming towards us there of those LED lights on the front of the DHL Penske Porsches.
Two improvements just there. Emanuele Pirro gets down to 106.260, and more significantly, Timo Bernhard, a new track record here. Timo Bernhard in car number 7, 105.813.
And he is absolutely flying in that 7 car. I've just watched him go over the skyline. Here he comes down towards Moss Corner, but over the skyline, down into turn number 2. It is just shocking. Absolutely. I remember standing there the first year we came here, and about halfway down turn 2 into that dip, there's a nice bit of shade there, and you can stand and take pictures and watch the cars coming across, take photographs and watch the cars coming across the skyline. And I've got some great pictures still of the Evo 1 Porsche 911 that Ralph Kellners and Alan McNish shared here for the Champion Racing team, and I thought that looked quick, but my heavens above, that 7 car last time around. He's coming across the line now, and Timo is winding himself up. He's got traffic in the shape of the Bell Aston Martin into turn 1, and that will slow him down mightily, a 6.1 or 6.8 last time. Now he'll get the power on into turn 2, and just watching him turn into turn 2 and dive down the hill is frightening. Not a hint of a lift or a brake there, and the aero on that car, something like the weight of 2 Porsche Boxsters, pushing that car down onto the road at the kind of speeds he's doing as he turns in there. And turn number 4. Oh, good heavens. There was an exclamation from the room next to us where Charles Dressing is spotting for TV. And this, well, this is Formula. This is like watching Formula cars just with bodywork. I have never seen anything change direction. I can't wait to see at Silverstone next month the Le Mans Series cars, which include Audis and Porsches and Peugeots, through Beckett, through the Beckett complex, and them changing direction through there. I am really excited about seeing that end of season finale. You can hear it on RadioLeMans.com, of course, as we'll be broadcasting extensively from Silverstone, our home race, in more ways than one, as I'm only about 30 minutes away from the track. That's Friday, Saturday and Sunday. The race is September the 14th. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we'll be broadcasting from there on RadioLeMans.com.
Yeah, watching Timo Bernhard now. He's on a clear lap right now. I don't think there's any traffic. He's certainly got through turn 1, 2, 3, and now 4 clearly, with no traffic in the way. And it's going to be interesting to see what lap time he can turn here, because he really is. The pace of that car is absolutely stunning. It looks like it's glued to the road through these quick corners.
Yeah.
He's now coming through the Moss hairpin one final time, coming onto the back straight, and getting the power down, coming back up the hill.
Do you remember when Skill-Xtrix cars first got the magnets at the back and they just sat on the track and never moved? And that's just cheating. Well, that's what that car looks like. It is not moving. Now, he's got the Aston Martin right where he doesn't want it in it. He's going to have a look down the inside and has to back out of it. It was the 007 Aston Martin, and that has held him up. It was Johnny Cocker at the wheel, and Johnny really couldn't do anything bar stay online. So here comes Timo, slightly chastened, I would have thought, by catching a car at the wrong place, and he comes through, and even with that, a 106.8 as he's gone through. Now again, he's got a good run in the first part of the lap, because we haven't seen too much go past us. There's an intake of breath from me as I go. I can feel my stomach dropping away, and I'm only watching it on TV.
We're half a mile away from there. It is stunning to watch, and it's amazing though how difficult it just shows that lap, because there was nobody even close to him at the beginning of the lap and through the first 4 or 5 corners, nothing in his sights whatsoever. And even then, he came up on the last couple of corners and there was traffic in the way. It just shows how difficult it is here to get a clear lap, to get the ultimate lap from these cars.
Just a stunning piece of driving.
The Audi's car number 2, they're laying some rubber coming out of turn 9.
Marco Werner, isn't it, who's in that at the moment. Let's go down the pit lane where Kelly is in the GT pits. And has, I think, did you say Dirk Müller?
Yes, from the 71 Tafel Ferrari. And Dirk, we saw you save the car after a tire puncture. What did you feel out there?
Well, I think we have our lucky one for this weekend, because it could have been worse. I just blew the tire and controlled the car. It happened in 4, and luckily, nothing happened. I controlled the car, drove back, and then just the guys had to tow me in, because otherwise the damage would have been too much on the car.
Looking back at Road America, there was a lot of action in those last couple of laps. Can you tell me how things played out for you?
Well, first of all, I'm happy that we finished third, because when I jumped in the car was seventh, so we gained up position. And I'm very happy that I did 5 years in touring car, because the last final hour was just touring car. And, you know, it was quite tough also for myself, because I couldn't see anything. The 45 lost so much oil, and my windscreen was just full of oil. And basically, just last lap was, it was really exciting.
We saw a lot of some body damage there on the right side of your car. Was that on the last lap?
Yeah, that was basically last lap. I mean, Wolf was trying everything. I tried everything. Under braking, we both came sideways. I got a little touch, which is fair and okay at that point. I came wider than him, and he overtook me on the inside. Unluckily, it was yellow over there because there was the racing car. But I will not count it as a fault. It was tough racing. Could have been 1 point just down. Now we are 7 points down, but it's still over 90 points to get. So nothing has happened.
You guys were out here testing earlier in the week. How did that go, and what are your expectations here for Sunday?
Well, I can say definitely that it was a big push and a big help to be here for testing. Definitely for the drivers to get used to it again. Also for us to get the car really suiting to us on this track. It's not so easy. Because of the runoffs are you know, quite hungry, and once you're off, you might well have a master disaster. But from that point of view, I'm really happy to be here. I'm really happy to see all the crowd already today on a Friday, and I hope we will have a good show again on Sunday.
All right, we saw a Ferrari win here last year, and I was talking to Wolf Hensler. He said he wasn't sure how it'd play out. Do you think this track favors Ferrari over Porsche?
I think after them. You know, the really impressive win that they had. There's no Ferrari, no Porsche track anymore. We're so tight. We came up. We were behind a little bit mid-season. Now we came back again, so we are, like, really even. And we have some favorite corners. They have favorite corners, especially favorite straights. So, yeah, it's not easy for us. It's not easy for them. It's now up to get no mistakes, and that is not the challenge.
We'll see how it all plays out. Thank you so much, Dirk Mueller and the 71 Tafel Ferrari.
Yeah, interesting comments is there. Jeremy and I were just listening intently. I think he's right, though. I think that the balance between what is clearly, what are clearly the two best marks in the GT category at the moment, in the GT2 category, the, you know, it's that classic Ferrari versus Porsche. And if you can see that, however, whenever it's been through the ages, you always know you're in for a battle. I think the balance is just about right. There are clearly strengths and weaknesses in each of the cars, but that's what makes sports car racing interesting for my money.
It is, and I think he's absolutely right. I mean, generally speaking, perhaps in the past, I'm not really sure about specifics, but certainly, you know, some tracks tended to suit the Ferrari a little bit better than the Porsche, and other tracks the other way around. But I think he's right. You know, they're so closely matched these days that wherever you go, it's nip and tuck between the Ferrari and the Porsche in terms of, you know, any particular superiority. They don't seem to have it. And it's, as you say, John, it's just what makes it so much fun. They're coming here, and it's really whichever team does the best job over the course of the weekend to optimize their car that's going to come out on top. And, of course, therefore, thereafter, make no mistakes. And that is, of course, the real key now, because these races are all flat-out sprints. And, you know, even we were at Road America for the last event, a four-hour race. You know, most of the races on the schedule are 2 hours, 45 minutes, like here at Mosport. But last race was a four-hour event, and, you know, it's treated absolutely no differently these days. In the past, you perhaps have to, you know, ease off a little bit at some stage during the race, but now it's a four-hour sprint. And when we go to Petit Le Mans next month, it's going to be a 10-hour sprint.
I'm just watching the G-loads on Gilles de Farran. We've got some telemetry being piped to us by our colleagues at TV. And going down through two, he was more than 2.5 Gs for about 4.5 seconds. Coming through eight, same, more than 2.5 Gs for about 3 seconds, and then snaps 2.5 G the opposite direction as he turns in to the penultimate corner. Just unbelievable stuff. And don't forget, of course, if you're listening to us now on at 180 miles an hour when he turns in, and just the car going through the corners is scrubbing off 20, 30 miles an hour as he dives into the pit lane. Unbelievable. And don't forget, if you're listening to us now on the World Wide Web, on Saturday, for the first time in the qualifying session of an American Le Mans Series race, you will be able to not only hear but see the action, as we'll be streaming live pictures from here at Mooresport all around the world, thanks to our colleagues at Wheeler TV and SpeedTV.com. You'll be able to see those at AmericanLeMans.com, SpeedTV.com and RadioLeMans.com, and we'll be matching up our commentary to the pictures. It's a properly full-produced TV show, just on your computer instead.
Very cool. I'm just watching a shot there of Gilles Deferrin. He brought that car into the pit lane, car number 66, and we don't have any radio communication there, but just judging by the sign language from Gilles to his engineer, Will Phillips, on the pit wall, I'd say he was not entirely happy with the way that car is handling the bumps here at Mooresport. And several of the drivers have been telling me that it does feel a little bit more bumpy than it was 1 year ago. Particularly, I think, up in turn three, I was told, and it's a real workout for these drivers. And you know, I think his car is not really handling the way he would like it over the rougher parts of the course. His best time so far, a 108.3 for Gilles Deferrin. That's a couple of seconds or so away from the best time so far.
Red flag is out just on the hour, with an hour still to go, half an hour of everybody, and then the final 30 minutes of just the prototypes. We've got a problem out on the circuit. Now, can't see straight away what that might be. We're being told debris on the circuit. Well, you just can't have any debris on the circuit. Not at the kind of speeds these guys are doing. There are places here where a puncture would be very nasty indeed.
A couple of improvements to note over the last few minutes. First of all, it was Chris Dyson who put in a 108.8. He found about three quarters of a second. That moved him up at the time, I think, from about 11th to 8th, I think it was. He's now been put down a couple of places. Luis Diaz has just turned in a quick lap in the Lowe's Fernandez Racing Acura. He's just done a 106.612. So it's still Timo Bernhardt that leads the way in car number 7, a 105.813. Marco Werner has gone second quickest now in the quicker of the two Audi R10 TDIs, the P1 leader, a 105.937, which is not quite yet down to the P1 track record. David Braben now down to third place, 106.005. Emanuele Pirro, a 106.2. James Rossiter in car number 26, the Andretti Green Racing XM Satellite Radio Acura, 106.6. The same as Luis Diaz in car number 15. And then Patrick Long in seventh place, a 106.9. So the top six cars within 0.8 of a second.
The track is taking a hammering from the apex
worse.
Of four down through towards the dip before you brake for five. And one of the holes that has been patched with some liquid tar is breaking up. And there's about a good fist-sized hole there in the surface. And that may well have to have some remedial attention before very much more of the weekend's gone by. Of course, the American Le Mans Series cars, not the only vehicles going around here this weekend. The sessions this morning were coming thick and fast.
Yeah, weren't they just?
With Porsches and Mazdas and IMSA lights and all of these cars.
The Formula Ford 2000s are here.
All of those cars with downforce, all of those cars with slick tyres.
Speed World Challenge, those guys are going to go plenty of grunt.
Yeah, lots of. And quite clearly, people are running as close to the ground as they can, as you would always on a racing car. A lot of these prototypes are effectively running zero ground clearance. And by that, what I mean is, as soon as the car gets pushed too far into the ground, you are driving a very expensive sledge, because the central plank down the middle of the car grounds out. And if you're not careful, that can actually take all four wheels off the ground. Indeed, that was what was happening with the R10 Audis last weekend at the Nürburgring 1000 Ks. And Alan McNish and Dindo Capello were having a devil's own job of getting that car set up. In the end, if you were listening, you'll know this, and I apologise, but in the end, they took the very unusual step of deciding to just junk their settings and go with the number two car's settings, with their teammate's settings. And the reason that they did that was that they believed that there was something fundamentally wrong with the suspension or the braking system on that car. And indeed, that was proved to be correct. So those parts have gone back to Ingolstadt. Now, we've got the Porsche Cayenne safety car with IMSA officials down at the dip in turn number 4/5, out of 4 into 5. And there is some concern being shown about that pothole, which is, in fact, bigger than a foot. Mm. It's as big as a Bigfoot foot, if you see what I'm saying. That is snowshoe-sized, now that we're seeing. The guys have just gone up and been able, just with their hands, to pull out several large pieces of what has been molten tar poured into there to help just cover the expansion and the cracks that are in there. This is a circuit that takes a hammering from the weather. Very warm temperatures here, and there's another big crack in the surface just further down the track. Huge temperature differentials, big, heavy, hard frosts here as well, which play havoc with the circuit. And as soon as you get any kind of crack in the surface, it freezes during the winter, the water's in there, and I'm afraid that there isn't a tarmac or an asphalt that's been made yet that can withstand that. And the guys here at Mosport do a terrific job of patching the circuit up every spring, making sure that it's good to go. I have talked to people who've been around here on Porsche Canada days, Porsche Canada Owners Club days, when they've had snow and frost on the circuit, and they've still gone out in their various cars and done battle with the circuit with frost and snow down. And I've got to tell you, as brave as I am, and as mental as I am about getting in a vehicle and going out and driving, here, in the snow, in a Porsche, I'm not sure. I think that might,
I think even I might draw the line on that one as well.
Mm. I've done snow in
ice racing any day, but
I've done snow in a Boxster before, and that wasn't very much fun. Donner Pass in a Boxster. No. A couple of cracks there opening up on that downhill run from turn 4 into Moss Corner. It's effectively a 10 turn circuit for the 2.5 miles, 2.459 miles of the Mosport International Raceway. Down through turn 1, flat out in these P2 cars at least. Clayton Corner is that blind entry, turning in just after the bridge at 180 miles an hour or thereabouts for the P2 cars, and the road just dropping away from you. You get a little bit of help turning into Quebec Corner, turn 3, the right-hander. It's a very late turn in. You're almost aiming for the end of the curb on driver's right, the inside of the corner. And getting on the power, the incredibly quick corner 4 is where the problem is at the moment. And then it's hard on the brakes, the car slamming down on its suspension at the bottom of the dip. And then off the brakes, letting the hills do the rest of the slowing down. And it is a very steep hill into Moss Corner, which is three distinct elements. The first part, actually, as long as you haven't got someone barreling up the right-hand side of you as you turn into the right-hander, you can almost forget about that corner, because what you're trying to do is get the car set up for the second part, the B part of 5A, B and C, which is another right-hander, 90 degrees, and you can use all of the road, get turned in, get on the power nice and early. 5C is a little left-hand kink, which is absolutely flat, and then 6 and 7 are the two kinks on the Mari-Andretti straight. Just after 7, there is a little rise on the road, and if you're not quite in the right place, the car can get a little squirrely there. It won't be a problem for the prototype cars, but the GT cars, slightly softer sprung, not as much aero, just want to be in the right part of the road, and you certainly don't want to be changing gear there and unsettling the car just as you're making that right-hand kink. Then into the S's, 8 and 9, and 8 is also a corner that has two distinct elements to it, the entry to it, the blisteringly quick entry for the prototype car, something like 180 miles an hour on turning, and no hint of a lift on the qualifying laps. And again, you're giving up that first apex to get the second one, and then it's just a dab on the brakes, get the car settled down for White's corner, which is 9, the left-hander. Can't afford to go too wide there, because there's a left-hander coming up the final corner, turn 10, right in front of us. And really, you need to be perfect on that to get across the start-finish line and down into turn 1, that quick turn 1, to steer with anybody you're trying to keep up with, because it's now not a braking area in turn 1 for the prototype cars, and that is, it's phenomenal. And Jeremy and I were having a little play at lunchtime in a Z06, and it goes round quick, this circuit, doesn't it? You're not out there very long.
No, you're absolutely right. It was a very impressive piece of machinery. It's very quick. A bit of understeer, it looked like, from my perspective on the passenger seat. But
well, again, the problem is the changes of concrete to asphalt, mm-hmm. to concrete again, and particularly in places like turn 3, you're on and off the concrete patch on the driver's right, the inside of the corner, several times through the corner and just feeling the grip from the front and the rear. And also in turn eight, as you're coming through turn eight, it's exactly the same thing. You drive across the concrete up to the far side of it and pull it back in again to get it in, to get it straight and set up right for turn nine, white's corner. Now, at the moment, we've got what amounts to a works crew out at turn four. We should have the little bollards out and the men at work signs out there because the tarmac here is in bad shape.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere for a while here, I'm afraid.
No, this is going to be possibly as long as half an hour or 40 minutes, I think, ladies and gents.
Well, I think we'll be lucky to get out today, frankly.
Well, they've got the shovels in there.
They're going to have to fill those holes.
They'll use quick drive.
Yeah, but it takes a bit to set, doesn't it?
We did have a race at Sebring a few years ago, and Jim Roller was in the truck listening, and he'll remember this, where we had one of the corners at Sebring break up, and they fixed it without stopping the race. Put the field under safety car, put some cones out, and it took about, all up, it probably took about 35, 40 minutes, maybe a little bit longer, and there was this great shot of one of the IMSA executives at the time, and his blazer and his chinos, just digging his heel in, and his Gucci loafers digging his heel in to find out if the quick dry was dry enough. Thumbs up, back in the golf cart, let's go racing. No nonsense. Jeez, you'd never see that in Europe, would you? That would be the track closed for a week. Yeah, the very brave works crew at Sebring, while the cars, albeit under safety car, were rattling by them at, you know, at 6 or 7 feet. And they're busy mixing the concrete and getting it in. What do you think of that? That's fantastic. Now, we've got one of the Audi pace cars has joined in as well. Let's see. Bits and pieces are being blown off with one of the supercharged leaf blowers that the guys bring to get the rubbish out of ducts of the cars. Now, this is track staff talking to the LMS safety crew and working out what we can do. Now, not sure whether the red flag was originally for this hole in the road, but certainly...
I think it was, yes.
I think that was the chunks of asphalt that were being pulled up. And we've got a couple of areas of concern now. The original one has... And what they've done is they've basically all of the original liquid tar that had been put in there. It's the sort of stuff that you would use in an expansion joint that had been put in there. And that basically has just pulled away, and some men in beige overalls have turned up with a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, once that initial breakup occurs with the stuff that's been laid in it as a patch, then it just the rest of it comes apart fairly quickly. It becomes fairly brittle. I mean, when it's as a whole filling the hole, so to speak, when it's one entirety filling that hole, then it does an excellent job, and it seals that gap, and it is pretty strong. But as soon as anything chips out of that, then it becomes quite brittle. And I think there's a problem there now, and they've had to chip away to get the rest of that excess material out of there, and now it'll be a job of patching that up and hoping that it stays put.
Well, we've got the track repair crew out, and they're already having a look at it. And they've brought a wheelbarrow. They've brought some concrete. I wonder if we can... we'll keep an eye on this. There's two rather large patches that need to go in here. And there's it's the old joke, isn't it, about a hole has appeared in the roadway and police are looking into it. Well, in this case, it's track officials that are looking into it at the moment. There I was, digging it all.
You're Bernard not going to start singing, are you?
Bernard Cribbins fans will be cringing even... and... Tim Meyer is down there, the man at the head of IMSA, the Le Mans Series.
Race director amongst other duties
yes.
that he holds. He's the guy ultimately responsible for making the decision as to when we can go back to competition.
Fastest time so far has been set by Timo Bernard, 105.8, faster than both the qualifying and the lap records at the moment. Let's have a quick word, first of all, with Timo Bernhard, and then we'll go down to the 66 pit as well. But first, here's Kelly.
And just like you were saying, a new track record here for Timo Bernhard in the number 7 Penske Porsche. Timo, where is this car making up time on the track here?
Oh, I hope with a driver. No, I mean, it's we over the window, we did a lot of detailed work with the 2008 Spyder. So a little bit of there, a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit on the aero. So small changes, and car is a little bit better compared to last year. But I feel comfortable at the moment, and I'm looking forward for the race. I think in the quick corners in the moment, we look very good. But here, you have to find the right compromise between all the quick corners and the one slow corner in 5B, you know, right before the long back straight. It's very tricky, and at the moment we're on a good direction.
Yeah, the times between the P2s and the P1 really mixed in. They're very close. Last year you guys came away with a win. I know Audi had some gearbox issues in that race, but what do you think it'll take to win on Sunday?
First of all, consistency. And what we can always rely on is a good strategy with Team Penske and a good, very good pit stop work, very fast pit stop. And very good work. So like that, we can always rely on that. And now the drivers have to do their job. And at the moment, like I said, we're in a good way with the setup. And but on the other hand, if you see like the competition in T2, it's so high that you can't do any mistakes. And I think that the P1 in the race will look stronger with the more power. They're easier in the traffic. But at the moment, we really look closely towards the class.
Well, congratulations for the moment on the new track record.
Thank you very much.
Timo Bernhard. Now we'll send it down to Carter, who I believe is with Luis Diaz. Luis Diaz, you haven't spent very much time in the number 15 Los Fernandez Acura today. Can you tell us what happened on the track?
Well, yeah, the track seems to be breaking up, going through turn five. Just before the braking zone. So it was looking pretty bad at the end, actually. I think they did a good job stopping in the station. I don't think it's going to be a big change. The track will not change a lot from now till 45 minutes. So, and I think the car is doing pretty well. So it's just a little problem that the track has there, but nothing major.
And IMSA officials tell me that it'll be at least another 45 minutes before we can get back on the track. However, that won't be the only challenge you guys face this weekend. What do you think is the most challenging part of this track in most parts?
Well, you know, I think it's more the traffic than other anything else. I mean, there's no a lot of places to pass, only the straight. But I think that's the main problem of this track. I mean, the rest is fantastic. When you're running alone, it's a beautiful track to be driving, and I think that's it. But I mean, I think almost everything here is very nice.
What other races are you looking forward to this season?
Well, obviously Detroit. I like street courses. Road Atlanta, that we're sharing the car with Michel Jourdain, a good friend of us. And Laguna. I mean, I think all the tracks for the American Man Series schedule are awesome tracks, are first class tracks like the series. So I'm very happy running in all these racetracks.
Thank you, Luis Diaz, and the number 15, Los Fernandez Acura.
Well done, ladies. More from the pits in just a moment. Carter Coyle joining us at very late notice. So our thanks to her, and we welcome her on her debut to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network. It's John Hindorf and Jeremy Shaw in the studio. And this is the first time, Jeremy, that I've ever had to commentate on men filling holes in roads. I've commentated on a lot of things, including the weather and umbrellas blowing over and things like that, but the first time that I've seen people actually had to commentate and do a play-by-play on road mending. And I noticed the man with the rake, you can't say that the guys here at Motorsport aren't hands-on. The general manager of the track, Miles Brandt, is the man with the rake at the moment, who is in there. He clearly has seen enough of this to know what he's doing. Suppose if you've been general manager for here for the amount of time that he has, he knows all about holes in the road.
Well, I think you have to. There's not a huge staff of people working up here.
No, they do a great job, though.
But yes, absolutely. That's exactly what I was going to say. And you know, they are very hands-on, and you know, whatever it takes, isn't it? That's the motto here, I think, here at Motorsport, and that's exactly what Miles is exhibiting right there.
So the red flag is out. The remedial work is going on apace, but the Now, and we've just had across the bottom of the screen, practice complete, checkered flag. So there will be no more practice, is what that means to us. Now, I was just wondering to myself, as the clock was still running, whether we might stop with 40 minutes left the session and at least allow everyone to go back out. Now, we're going to try and find some more time for the teams, is what Race Control is telling us. Clearly, we only had about, or in fact, just over a half of the time we should have done. But mostly, that was the GT cars, of course, because they were out first. The prototype cars only, Jeremy, had about 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah, just I think probably just about just a little bit over 30 minutes, probably, wasn't it? Not much more than that. And the GT cars, these had around about an hour of their allotted, originally scheduled 90 minutes, but they've lost maybe a half an hour of track time. But as you say, the prototype cars, if this session is indeed complete, we've lost a total of an hour of track time. The good news for those that tested here, of course, earlier in the week, is that they tested here earlier in the week, so they have plenty of data this weekend from which to draw. But
21
the
cars.
That didn't,
was 21
that really,
cars were
able to test, were really? But for the guys that weren't able to make it to the test, then this is going to be a serious headache for them.
Now, the two areas that have been worked on, I'm sorry to be a bit boring about this and talk about what's going on the track, and we'll give you a rundown of the times in just a second. Right in the dip, or between 4 and 5, heading up towards Moss Corner, they are on the racing line, and they are in the braking area. A lot of scores on the tarmac itself, on the asphalt itself, where clearly the cars are bottoming out. There's also an area of concern, probably about 15 or 20 yards back up, again, right on the racing line. There's a little bit of a dip there that where the cars are bottoming out, and there is a large crack there, which I've just seen one of the safety marshals, the IMSA safety team, getting a full four fingers in and pulling the edges of that crack to see how stable it is. And I'm thinking that for the sake of probity, that really something in there as well might not be a bad idea. So it looks as though, at least for the time being, we are going to be waiting for action. We're going to go through the times here as we are told that the live timing and scoring is not up to its best at the moment. It was a bit of a challenge here because we don't have very fast access to internet, etc. So let's run through the times for you. Timo Bernhard with the fastest time of 105.8. 105.9 for Marco Werner in the number one, in the number two Audi, fastest of the P1 cars in second place. David Brabham in third for the first of the Acuras. So Porsche, Audi, Acura, the first three, 106.005. Then Emmanuel Pirro's car, the number one, in fourth position with a 106.2. And let's have a word with Emmanuel, who's down in the pit lane now.
And Emmanuel has got his one of his favorite co-drivers back with him, Dindo Capello. Emanuele, tell me how happy are you to have Dindo back this week?
No, it's very good because, you know, it's the only one who can match my hairstyle a little bit, you know. No, actually, to be perfectly honest, we joined Audi together 15 years ago. I can't believe that. And for some different reasons, we never drove together, and we are really best friends. When Dindo came, he was actually much more junior than me, although we almost have the same age, but in terms of experience, I was already kind of senior. But we grew up together in Audi, and we shared a lot of great moments. And
In racing, it's all about staying ahead of everybody, no pun intended. But when we got called in the red right here, we were going to seat rotors and seat pads for Detroit, so we didn't have to do that when we get there because our time is limited. And going back to back, it's back to the attrition game. We've got to be very careful here to come out of here basically unscathed, so we can push harder in Detroit.
Thank you, Jim Tappel. Tappel Racing obviously has its hands full here at Motorsport this weekend.
Thanks to the ladies down there in the pit lane. The work goes on apace. You're listening to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, powered by RadioLeMans.com, and we have two patches complete now in the run to turn number five. Let's continue the rundown. We've got the top four done. In fifth position, James Rossett has been doing great work in the 26 Andretti Green Racing Acura. All sorts of rumors about that team next year. A1GP, question mark. Will there still be an IndyCar next year? Will there still be an American Le Mans Series next year? Lots of rumors about that team at the moment. Maybe we'll see if we can grab Michael this weekend and have a word with them. Be very interested to see if they take over the A1GP running for Team America. Luis Diaz is in sixth position on a 106.6. It's super tight at the top. Those top six cars within 8/10 of a second of pole, or of the fastest car, excuse me, on this promoter test here. Marino Franchitti and Gilles Deferna next up. In fact, it's Gilles next from Marino in eighth position, 108.3. And a bit of a gap there, a second and a half between Pat Long in seventh position and Gilles Deferran in eighth. Then half a second back to Franchitti in ninth in the first of the Dyson Porsches, with Chris Dyson, his teammate, just 0.050 of a second behind him. Those two cars, as ever, very, very evenly matched. That's the top 10. In 11th, Ben Devlin for BK Motorsport and Mazda Speed. And the 30 car, now this, we haven't talked about these guys at all, the Intersport Racing, the second car, Ryan Lewis and John Faulkner. And that 30 car ahead of the 37. Now, looking down, it appears the 37 car hasn't been out. 27, 28, 29, yes, that would be right. So, that's very odd. Only one of the Intersport cars out.
Yeah, what's the other car that hasn't been out? There's only 27 cars have been on track. We're missing another one too, aren't we?
Right, let me
see. Should be 29, shouldn't we?
Yes, there should be 29. So, that's the only one out of there. Autocon's been out. It must be a GT2 car.
18? Yeah, I think it might be the VC car, is it?
VC car has not been out. Correct.
Okay.
The VC car, which we were... Now, I thought I saw that car, I certainly saw it on pit lane.
I saw it in the paddock earlier on.
Saw it on pit lane, ready to go out. So maybe it just hasn't had its times recorded for whatever reason. They are looking to change their livery this weekend.
Have changed their livery this weekend.
I've heard that's not the end of it.
Oh, well, true. Yeah, good point.
They've gone to a white car with a red roof. No swoosh on the side, but I'm told that there's a new livery to come on that car. So the top dozen, then, are all prototype cars. Then the GT1 class of three, headed by Johnny O'Connell and Olivia Beretta, the usual tenth of a second between those two.
A little bit more between those two than when I last looked. What, you know, about 5 minutes before this session was brought to a premature conclusion, there's only about a half a tenth or so between the two. Now it's about a tenth and a half. So Johnny O'Connell improved the best time that he had done. It's now down to 1:15.0.
The Tony Burgess-driven 12, the Autocon creation car, the Jean Richard Swiss watch-sponsored machine, down in 15th position. And that car, and particularly Tony, not looking at their best when they were out there. Tony was pottering around.
What's the date today, by the way? Is it?
The date today is the 22nd.
Yeah, happy birthday, Tony, in that case. It's I don't know whether he wants to say it. Does he want to say how old he is?
No.
50 what? Nothing? Right. This is born in 1955. He's been around a little while as Tony. He's from Toronto, of course, and you know he's spent a lot of his life here at Motorsport over the years. He also raced with the team at Sebring, I believe, didn't he, the first race of the season. But I think it's probably his first race since then, certainly his first race at this level since then. Whether he's done any amateur races in the meantime, I'm not quite sure.
And never easy to get the confidence here in a downforce car. I remember Rob Dyson jumping into the Dyson a couple of years ago in case Butch Leitinger couldn't get back from a Grand Am race. And it was wet, and he was struggling to get the car up to speed, with the result being that the downforce wasn't there, and he couldn't get the car around the corners. And I do think that may be a little bit of what's happening with Tony at the moment. He's not actually going quick enough to get the downforce working on the creation in the faster stuff that allows him then to make up the time that he should be getting out of that car.
That's right, particularly having been out of the cockpit for such a long time. You know, it was Sebring in March since he last drove this car, and that's... Well, you know, it's a long time. You win, and it's a completely different sort of a racetrack as well.
And as we were saying earlier on, how would you like to be careering down to turn number two, thinking, do I really need to brake for this? Okay, maybe not. No, not a chance. Thanks very much. Mika Salo was the fastest time in GT2, 1:17.7. I think it was Jamie Milo actually that put that in early on in the session when the GT cars had the track to themselves for the first 30 minutes. Dominic Farnbacher was last at the wheel of the 71 Tafel car that's now in second place, just 2.5 tenths between first and second. Wolf Hensler, another 2.5 tenths back in third for the first of the Lizards on an 18.2. Then we've got the 08 Aston Martin, some nearly four seconds off the pace of the Corvette. So that leaves in fourth position in GT2, the 87 Farnbacher Lowell's Porsche of Pierre Kaffer. 1:19.0, 1:19.4 for the 73, the second of the Tafel Racing cars. In sixth position, it's another Flying Lizard, the 46 car, Johannes van Overbeck in the 46 car, a 19.4. And we'll quickly wrap up the last three or four times before we go back to the pits. Paul Drayson and Johnny Cocker have got the newly rear-wing 007 Aston Martin up to seventh in class with a 20.9, 20.21.0. for Seth Nyman and the 44 Lizards. Andrea Robinson and the rest of the Robertson Racing team are 21.2 in the number 40 Ford GT. Tom Milner in the 21 Panos in 10th position in GT2. They'll not be happy with that. This is a power circuit and that car should be better. And rounding off the GT2 category of the cars we've seen, 27 of the 29 we should have seen, is the Primetime Race Group Viper. In 11th position. Let's go down to the pit lane and pick up another driver's eye view.
Down here with David Brabham, fresh off yet another win for the Tequila Patron Highcroft Racing P2. And David, first of all, earlier Don was saying up in the booth, the guys were saying this is a great track for Acura and specifically for David Brabham. What do you think suits you so well on this track?
I don't know. Why did you say that?
Well, you looked pretty quick out there.
We did 2 days testing here, Monday and Tuesday. We were a few tenths off, about 3 tenths off the ultimate pace. And come here with a few little changes. And the car responded to it very, very well. Obviously the Acuras are fast here, but, we anticipate the Porsche being very fast here as well. So I don't think you're going to see very much in it. It's going to be another close race.
So let's look back at Road America, and you guys really playing out a nice pit strategy there at the end. Can you kind of take me through the end of that race and maybe when you realized that kind of your technique had, or your strategy rather, had paid off?
Yeah, when I got in the car and went back out again, I was trying to chase them down because we didn't get behind the pack on the restart, so I was on my own. So I was rattling off some fast times, and I was catching some of the guys in front of me, and then we had another yellow, and I'm sitting there in eighth position, and then all of a sudden, all seven cars in front of me went to the pits, and I was going, yes, I got a great restart, and I felt if we didn't have any more holdups, I could have won the race overall. We certainly had the pace, but a bit of traffic and another yellow, just those Audis, when they go past pretty quick. And Frank was doing a pretty good job too, because he towed in right behind one of the Audis that passed me, and he got in front of me. And, I didn't have enough in the car to be able to get back and pass him because we were pretty similar. And then unfortunately Paul Drayson clashed, and that obviously put us back in first, and I had the Porsche behind me. And it was just a question of holding on, and it was a great victory for the Patron Highcroft Racing team again,
And speaking of the overall victory, this might be a place where it could come to a P2. It did last year. What do you think it'll take? I mean, with the Penske Porsche, with a really fast time out of Timo Bernhard, and that number two Audi is right up there with you, what will it take to get an overall win here at Mosport?
You know what? I don't know if it's really going to change anything from the races we've had so far. I mean, all the races have been amazingly close. And we've been I'd say fortunate in some way, but, I think you make your own luck as well. I think the team, with the strategy, certainly on a few races, has helped us. I'm sure it'll be the same for this weekend. It's going to be very close. One thing that we have noticed here is with traffic, because our speed in our cars here are so incredibly fast, we can lose a big chunk of time in traffic. So I think traffic's going to play a bigger role here than probably some other places.
Well, best of luck to you, David Robb. I'm looking, hopefully, for two in a row.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. John.
Thank you, Kelly. David Brabham, you can hear the smile in his voice. There'll be a slight frustration, I think, from the teams, wondering whether they're going to get back out again. Don't forget, you're listening to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, powered by RadioLeMans.com. And we heard for sure last weekend, we speculated, we were pretty certain that we were going to get the two Peugeots when we reported it at Road America. And last weekend, Michael Barge in the press conference on Friday afternoon at the Le Mans Series race at the Nürburgring confirmed two cars and six drivers for the Petit Le Mans. Only that race, though, not staying for Laguna. And that is a tremendous fillip for the series. We were mentioning earlier on, if you are just joining us, by the way, expecting to hear this practice session, we've been stopped for quite some time now as we're repairing some holes that have appeared in the circuit down towards the breaking point of Turn 5, Moss Corner. The P1 field at Petit could be 10 or a dozen cars and some very interesting names, certainly with the three creations, the two cars coming over from the UK. Mike Jankowski very excited about having three creations in the field. Two Peugeot coupes, possibility of the Chiroux P1 car, I'm hearing, with the Aston Martin engine coming as well.
I'd love to see that car. It's a beautiful looking car, isn't it?
Quick as well, mate.
Yeah.
Very quick. It's a new chassis. Yeah. This is the second car that they've bought, that Chiroux have bought from Lola. And they've reinstalled the Aston V12 engine.
And actually, the car went well. Road Atlanta is sort of trying to really should suit that car,
perfect,
shouldn't it? Yeah.
Perfect. And I think that the Peugeots know that too.
Yeah.
We're going to see the new P2 coupe here for the first time in the American Le Mans Series. The Speedy Seba team have been running, of course, in Europe with the Mazda engine in an open-top car with the Cruz Schiller car. But now we get the closed-top P2 and the Mazda engine in their first union. And Andy Blackmore has done some tremendous artist impressions of the car, as it would look if they hold their current colour scheme with the BP sponsorship. And by the way, there is a brand new spotters guide for the ALMS. Andy Blackmore, there's a link from the American Le Mans Series, from the RadioLeMans.com site in the American Le Mans Series section, or you can go to spottersguides.com and support Andy. He does an awful lot of work, and his work is very, very good indeed. So plenty of excitement to come in the American Le Mans Series. Also, huge rumours about people taking road car engines and banging them into prototypes, having clearly seen the way that the Aston engine has gone in the Chiroux Lola. And there is a French team who are looking at an American engine to go into a British chassis. Work that one out. Let's go down to the pits. Carter is with us today. Thanks very much, Carter, for stepping in at the very short notice. Gerardo Bonilla, we've just been talking about the Mazda Speed BK Motorsport car. One of the last couple of times we'll see this car in the open top format. And he's down in the pit lane now with Carter.
Gerardo, this certainly isn't what you expected to be doing this afternoon, sitting here on the wall watching all of the teams pack up for the afternoon. Exactly what's going on?
Well, we've actually been told that we might still get to go out at 5 o'clock. The IMSA light cars are going to go out and check it out the track. And if they don't rip up what was repaired, then we'll go out and we'll rip it up for the next group. But anyhow, it's a bit of a delay, but we're used to curveballs in motorsports and this kind of thing happens. We're just dying to get our BP Mazda on the track and see what this place is like. It'll be my first time running an LMP2 at this track, and this is one of the fastest tracks in the world. You know, with all the high-speed corners, there's only one slow turn on the track. So we're anxious, very anxious to get out there, and I'm dying to get my first laps in the LMP2 car.
Tell us a little bit about what we can look forward to in the new car.
Well, there's going to be, I think we're all going to discover some things with the new car. Everybody knows that the coupe is probably going to have a slight performance advantage over an open car. I mean, you just look at them, and you know there's going to be an advantage through the air. But it's going to be a beautiful car, and it should be very similar overall because the chassis isn't that much different. But driving is going to be a lot of fun. We know we're going to get a lot of lookers, and people are going to look at it really closely. Probably the fans are going to take a lot of pictures of it, and we're going to make it go as fast as we can.
Have you actually gotten the car here in the shop yet?
Oh, yeah. That car is in the shop. It's being worked on. It's under tight security. But we've all had a chance to have a look at it, and we're oohing and aahing, and they've already cleaned some drool off the side pots there.
Thanks, Gerardo Bonilla, here at the number 8 DK Mazda car.
Yes, it is a very pretty car indeed. And last weekend, the 33 car, the Seba Speedy Garages sponsored machine, did a cracking job out in the Le Mans Series and grabbed a podium, memory serves. It was certainly running well up early on. They had a puncture and then had to fight back. And that would be a worthy addition to the American Le Mans Series. Well, we now know that if we are going to be back out, we'll be back out later. So we've gone through the times for you. I think what we will do, and hopefully back in London, Tim Greer is listening to this, that we will take a break and let the Indy Lights cars go out and then come back at 5 o'clock and see what we've got left in terms of time. And what I promise we will do is even if there's nothing happening, we'll come back and give you an update at 5 o'clock so that you will at least know what's going on one way or the other. And we'll make sure that we post the latest news on the website as well. So for the moment, and with apologies for those people perhaps just tuning in, the good news potentially is that we can run quite late here at Mooresport, and I'm hoping that what I'm seeing on the timing screen is a portent of what we have to cover, because they've reset the clock to 2 hours. I can't believe we're going to do the whole of the two-hour session again, but some time to be made for the American Le Mans Series cars in about 50 minutes' time. So for the moment then, I think we'll sign off from our vantage point on the outside of Turn 10 here. My thanks to Carter and to Kelly down in the pit lane, and also to Jeremy Shaw, who's been with me in the booth. And we will go back and review some earlier action from our sports car archive and come back and be with us a little before 5 o'clock, which is in about 50 minutes time here at Mooresport. For the moment, though, I'm John Hindhoff. Thanks very much for listening, and bye for now.